Dr. B. Chisholm, Director General of the World Health Organization from 1948 to 1953. Dr. Brock Chisholm was born in Oakville, Canada, on the 18th of May, 1896. He volunteered for military service during World War I at the age of 18 and completed his studies after the end of the war, receiving his degree of Doctor of Medicine from the University of Toronto in 1924. Dr. Chisholm then did postgraduate work at several hospitals in England. In 1934, he returned to Canada and practiced psychological medicine in Toronto until 1940. In September 1942, Dr. Chisholm became Director General of Medical Services with rank of Major General, a post which he held until November 1944. He was then appointed Deputy Minister of Health, which position he held until July 1946, when he was elected Executive Secretary of the WHO Interim Commission. He became the first Director General of the World Health Organization on the 21st of July 1948, and held this post until 1953, the year of his death. Among other posts held by Dr. Chisholm was that of Chairman of the Canadian Medical Procurement and Assignment Board from 1942 to 1944. He was President of the Canadian National Committee for Mental Hygiene and Chairman of the Health Committee, Canadian Youth Commission, from 1943 to 1946, and was a member of many medical societies. Dr. Chisholm wrote, among other things, many articles for technical journals. Dr. M. G. Kandau, Director General of the World Health Organization from 1953 to 1973. Dr. M. G. Kandau was born in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in 1911. He obtained his medical degree at the School of Medicine in the state of Rio de Janeiro, and received special training in public health at the University of Brazil and at Johns Hopkins University, Baltimore, in the United States of America. In 1934, Dr. Kandau entered the public health service of his country. Between 1943 and 1950, he was Director of Division, Assistant Superintendent, and later Superintendent of the Servicio Especial de Saúde Pública, a cooperative health service established by the Brazilian government, together with the Institute of Inter-American Affairs. Dr. Kandau joined the staff of the World Health Organization at Geneva in 1950 as Director of the Division of Organization of Health Services. Within a year, he was appointed Assistant Director General in charge of advisory services. In 1952, he moved to Washington as Assistant Director of the Pan-American Sanitary Bureau, which is also the regional office of the World Health Organization for the Americas. While occupying that position, he was elected by the World Health Assembly to become Director General of the World Health Organization. He took up that post in Geneva in July 1953 and held it until 1973, when he retired. Dr. Kandau is the author of several scientific papers covering a wide range of subjects, among them malaria, parasitology, public health administration, biostatics, rural hygiene, etc. Dr. Kandau died in Geneva on the 24th of January, 1983. Dr. H. Mahler, Director General of the World Health Organization since 1973. Dr. Halfdan T. Mahler was born at Vivid, Denmark, on the 21st of April, 1923. He obtained his medical degree at the University of Copenhagen in 1948, and he holds a postgraduate degree in public health. Shortly after graduation and specialized training in tuberculosis, Dr. Mahler entered international public health work. From 1950 to 1951, he acted as planning officer for a mass tuberculosis campaign in Ecuador. He joined the World Health Organization in 1951 and spent almost 10 years in India as senior WHO officer attached to the National Tuberculosis Program. From 1962 to 1969, he was chief of the tuberculosis unit at WHO headquarters in Geneva and secretary to the WHO Expert Advisory Panel on Tuberculosis. In 1969, he was appointed director, Project Systems Analysis. In September 1970, he was made Assistant Director General, responsible for the Division of Strengthening of Health Services and the Division of Family Health, while retaining the direction of Project Systems Analysis. In May 1973, while occupying that position, he was appointed Director General of the World Health Organization by the 26th World Health Assembly. He took up his duties as the organization's third Director General in July 1973, was reappointed Director General of WHO in May 1978 for a second five-year term, and in May 1983 for a third five-year term. Dr. Mahler is the author of publications relating to the epidemiology and control of tuberculosis. His more recent publications deal with the political, social, economic and technological priority in the health sector, and the application of systems analysis to healthcare problems. The health situation of hundreds of millions of people in the world today is unacceptable, particularly in developing countries. What is WHO doing to help this situation? Well, WHO is what its member states make of it. Although its ultimate goal is humanitarian, WHO is, above all, a scientific and technical organization aimed at social development. This is the definition of health as it appears in the WHO Constitution. At first sight, it may look unrealistic, utopian, and unattainable. Far from being a lofty ideal, it was intended as a never-ending challenge by the founding fathers of the organisation back in 1946. What counts is not to actually reach the goal, but to endeavour, step by step, to make the ideal a day-by-day reality. The WHO headquarters, built in 1966 in Geneva, Switzerland, houses the permanent secretariat of the organisation. About 1,500 people, doctors, scientists, technicians, administrators, from over 100 different nationalities, work there at all times for the betterment of the world's health. The World Health Organization is a specialized and autonomous agency of the United Nations. Its relationship with the UN is governed by an agreement. Far from being isolated from the UN system, WHO works in close cooperation with other UN agencies, institutions, programs, and funds, such as UNICEF, UNDP, IBRD, ILO, FAO, UNCTAD, UNDRO, UNEP, UNFPA, UNHCR, UNIDO, UNITAR, UNRWA, UNRISD, the World Food Programme, the various economic commissions, and others. The WHO organisational chart indicates the legislative and executive bodies of the organisation. Its overall authority is the World Health Assembly, which, through the Executive Board, instructs the Director General to implement the programme of work and gives him the means, i.e. the budget, to do so. WHO was the first international organisation to adopt the principle of decentralisation so as to have a better idea of needs and resources in different parts of the world. The same process of planning and implementation is thus followed by the WHO regional committees. There are six of them throughout the world, which instruct the director of each regional office to incorporate their plans and decisions in the total WHO programme of work and budget for submission to the World Health Assembly. At the Headquarters Secretariat, the five Assistant Director Generals, bottom of the chart, under the authority of the Director General or of the Deputy Director General, are each in charge of a certain number of programmes, all of them incorporated in the WHO Global Development Programme. The 38th World Health Assembly approved an effective working budget of $543.3 million for 1986-87. With the addition of extra budgetary funds, WHO will have at its disposal $1,000 million to support health activities in its 166 member states, of which 120 are developing countries. The World Health Assembly, the supreme authority of the organisation, takes place every year in May, usually in Geneva. It is composed of delegates from member states, in most cases the Minister of Health himself, or Secretary of State, or Director of Health Services, often accompanied by advisers. This gathering of several hundred people is held in the vast assembly hall of the United Nations Palais. The delegates discuss the world health situation, review the organisation's work, and decide on future policy, programme and budget using six official languages, which are, in alphabetical order, Arabic, Chinese, English, French, Russian and Spanish. Apart from plenary sessions, the work of the Assembly is divided into two committees, one dealing with scientific and technical aspects of the programme of work, and the other debating mostly financial, administrative, legal and political questions. The WHO Executive Board, EB, meets twice a year in Geneva. Composed of 30 members, divided among the world's different regions, each member is designated by his or her own government for his or her personal capacity and competence in the field of public health. The work of the Executive Board consists of preparing the next session of the World Health Assembly and implementing its decisions. WHO regions have been established in accordance with the wishes of concerned governments. There are six in all, covering 166 member nations, plus one associate member. All in all, they account for 99% of the world's population. The original intention was, and still is, to bring together countries with more or less similar public health problems or comparable cultural backgrounds, to facilitate the discussion of common issues and concerns, and to encourage technical cooperation among them on an equal basis. In order to keep all these regions and countries informed of what is going on in the rest of the world in the health field, as it relates to general economic and social development, WHO has instituted a vast programme of health and biomedical information, the main purpose of which is to make suitable and relevant information available and accessible to those who need it, at the time they need it, and wherever they may be. Another example of WHO's activities for the benefit of the world as a whole is the administration and maintenance of international health regulations, inherited from past institutions dating back to the 19th century, and intended at the time to warn countries of worldwide epidemics, such as the plague and cholera of sinister memory. Although nowadays, since the worldwide eradication of smallpox, there are only three quarantinable diseases left, plague, cholera, and yellow fever, the IHR still represents an important part of WHO's global program of epidemiological surveillance. The WHO Yellow Health Passport, see slide, is known the world over. The regulations provide maximum possible protection against the spread of quarantinable diseases from one country to another, and at the same time, minimum possible interference with movements of persons and goods over national borders. A third example of WHO's general activities covering the whole world is the standardisation and monitoring of so-called biologicals, i.e. mostly drugs, vaccines and other medical products, so as to ensure their safety and potency wherever they are used and whatever their origin. This is only part of WHO's new programme on drug policies and management, which was initiated with major emphasis on collaborating directly with countries in the formulation of national drug policies within the framework of their health and social development, and in setting priorities in the drug sector as a whole, so as to ensure the availability of safe, efficacious and cheap drugs everywhere in the world. WHO HQ is also the focal point of the global programme for the prevention of blindness. This affliction, which affects about 40 million people throughout the world, causes not only tremendous human suffering, but also severe economic and social handicaps. The four major causes of blindness exist mostly in poor countries. Two of them are infectious diseases, namely trachoma and onchocerciasis, or river blindness. The third is a nutritional deficiency called xerophthalmia, or dry eye, and caused by a lack of vitamin A. All three are preventable. The fourth cause, cataract, is easily curable by means of a cheap operation, the cost of which should not exceed about $5. Other major causes are eye accidents, mainly in places of work, and glaucoma. Apart from preventing the causes of blindness, the long-term objective of the programme is to introduce adequate eye care and to promote eye health at the peripheral level through primary health care, PHC, the main emphasis being on health education and community participation. There are other activities, more localised, which are also carried out all over the world. Perhaps the most important is the education and training of medical and auxiliary personnel. Very often, in fact, especially in developing countries, there are enough doctors and medical staff in townships, but not enough, or even none at all, in rural areas. Apart from educating doctors, in numbers which will in any case be insufficient for the years or decades to come, the most realistic solution for developing countries, and the only one which will enable them to attain total population coverage with essential health care, is to employ community health workers who can be trained in a short time to perform essential tasks. Active community participation in essential health care cannot be achieved without health education of the public. One of the major objectives of health education is to stimulate people to assume responsibility for their own health, and thereby to promote individual, family, community, and ultimately national self-reliance in the field of health. Such participation is best mobilised through appropriate education of the public, which enables communities to deal with their real health problems in the most suitable ways. Prevention of ill health is, more often than not, a way of life. People have to know where diseases come from, what causes them, how they can be avoided. They have to know the close relationship, for instance, between what they eat and malnutrition. between polluted water and diarrheal diseases, the difference between breastfeeding and artificial nutrition. All this cannot be taught by mass media alone. To teach people how to achieve better health through their own efforts is only one of the tasks of the primary health worker. Health education is a vital component of PHC. The community health worker is the mainstay of any primary health care system. Between the doctors, often inaccessible or insufficient in number, and the people, the primary health worker ensures an indispensable link. Not only in rural areas, but also in shanty towns at the periphery of the large cities of the Third World, in nomadic areas, and, why not, in developed countries too, where the enormous cost of medical care puts a more and more intolerable burden on the shoulders of the industrialized world. So the types of primary health workers needed will vary by country and community according to needs and resources. Endowed with basic education, primary level, and trained in a short time to perform simple tasks, the community health worker is the most realistic solution to attaining total population coverage with essential care. One of the tasks of the community health worker is obviously to bring immediate relief to populations affected by common ailments and injuries of all sorts, so that village people no longer have to walk for miles or wait for unreliable transportation before being treated. It also means a 24-hour service if the primary health worker lives on the spot. PHC workers will function best if they are chosen by the community and are themselves a member of it, and if they reside in the community they serve. It will also often prevent complications of diseases and injuries. Another task of the primary health worker is the storage and distribution of essential drugs. Medicaments are often scarce and expensive. Moreover, they are as often inappropriate and unnecessary. In some developing countries, massive drug expenditure may represent anything between 40 and 60% of the country's total health budget. A worldwide scientific consultation has shown that about 200 basic pharmaceutical substances can meet the basic health needs of most people. A restriction in the list of drugs would also enable governments in developing countries either to produce medicaments themselves or at least to buy bulk supplies of them. Like vaccines, drugs should also be available, possibly free of charge, so that they reach the patient when and where they are actually needed. PHC is primarily directed towards improving individual family health in the community. As such, it first aims at protecting mothers and children. The provision of easily accessible family health services is one of the prerequisites of PHC. In many countries, infant and maternal mortality rates have declined dramatically, and the health condition of mothers and children has made impressive progress. But hundreds of millions are still suffering. In the developing world, infant, childhood and maternal death rates and levels of ill health remain unacceptably high. This tragic waste of human life can be prevented if proper action is taken, particularly through PHC. It has to be realised that more than one-third of the world population in the year 2000 has yet to be born, and that 2,500 million of the projected population of 6,000 million in the year 2000 will be under the age of 21. A reduction in both child and adult mortality can help people feel that the future is worth living for. The primary health worker should encourage breastfeeding. Babies should be breastfed for as long as possible. Any healthy and well-nourished mother who is fully breastfeeding her infant, should not in principle need to introduce any compliments until after the first 4 to 6 months of life. Even in cases necessitating hospitalisation, facilities should be provided for the mother to remain with the infant and continue breastfeeding. In cases where the child's own mother is unable to breastfeed, the first alternative should be breast milk from other sources. Breastfeeding is not only best for the health of the baby, but also for the health of the mother, including its physical, emotional, and psychological benefits. Moreover, the contraceptive effect of breastfeeding is well known. Family planning, which is only part of family health, is often a controversial subject, more cultural and social than medical. It is nevertheless undeniable that too frequent pregnancies are heavily detrimental to the health of the mother and consequently to that of the child. One of the major obstacles to the extension of family planning is the contention that parents need children to support them in their old age. Children, especially in poor countries, are therefore expected to substitute for a missing social security system, hence the high number of them. But if family planning is applied with PHC, the healthy survival of the first 2 or 3 children will provide couples with a feeling of security they seek for their old age. It is estimated that between 1/2 and 2/3 of mankind suffer from malnutrition, the leading cause of death among young children, particularly in the third world. About 1/4 of the people in developing countries are inadequately fed. In East Asia and Africa, 25% to 30% of the population are undernourished. 10 million children in the developing world suffer from severe protein-calorie malnutrition, and a further 80 million from moderate malnutrition. Nutritional deficiencies such as goiter, due to lack of iodine, anemia, lack of iron and other trace elements, and xerophthalmia, blindness due to lack of vitamin A, affect several hundred million people. The synergic effect of malnutrition and disease is well known. The poorest sectors of population are those which also have the poorest diet and consequently are most susceptible to the ravage of disease. As a consequence of undernutrition, the common infectious diseases of children, for example diphtheria, whooping cough, measles and diarrhea, take a much more severe toll in poor countries. A major problem in fighting malnutrition is the population's lack of knowledge or guidelines on proper nutritional requirements. There is also a lack of basic health services, especially for the most vulnerable population groups in poverty areas, mainly pregnant women and children. A new strategy for the control of malnutrition is proposed by WHO. The two main components are to attack the problems initially in the most critical period of life, i.e. during the first years of infancy, and to do so with maximum use of on-the-spot resources, utilising locally available and acceptable foods. It is in this spirit, and in the spirit of PHC, that school gardens, see slide, are encouraged at village level, so as to make people, especially children, more aware of cheap and valuable food items. Often, for many different reasons, people hesitate to consult a health specialist. The community health worker cannot afford to be passive and wait for people to come. If people are not coming, he or she must go to them. Home visiting is thus one of the principles of PHC. It may also happen that the community health worker is not sufficiently qualified to treat a complicated case. Of course, health interventions should take place as often as possible in the community. However, when more complicated care is indispensable, or advice on intricate problems is essential, the community health worker needs somewhere to turn for help. More highly trained staff dispensing a wider range of specialised services, requiring more sophisticated techniques and establishments, constitute the next link to PHC in the health system chain. These establishments, be they better staffed rural health centres or district hospitals, also ensure the continuing training, guidance and supervision of community health workers, and provide them with logistic support in supplying drugs, pesticides, sanitary and medical equipment, technical advice, and transportation of patients where and when these are needed. Another way of ensuring continuing supervision of and help for community health workers, especially where no health post is available in the village, is to send mobile teams around, composed of at least one doctor and specialised staff, to whom the primary health worker can refer difficult cases for treatment. This is better than nothing, but the ideal setting, however modest, is a village health post.